Easter Sunday morning, Jesus is risen. Finally, Easter Sunday morning, we have spent the last 6 weeks here at Nexus focused around Jesus' last words from the cross. And this morning, I want to begin our Easter Sunday service around Jesus' first words he utters after his resurrection. Risen from the dead, Easter Sunday, Jesus stands in the midst of disciples huddled in fear. And standing in their midst, real enough to touch, real enough for him to eat, he pronounces these words to the first disciples, "Peace be with you." What Resurrection Sunday announces is that we find ourselves in the midst of a new story unfolding in the world, and it is one of peace, what Scripture calls shalom. Well, what does shalom mean? It means God's peace. It means a peace from God that repairs, restores, makes new, and redeems all that is broken. And what is broken in our world? What is broken in our world is that the world has experienced interference, a disruption in the way we relate to God, in the way we relate to each other, in the way we relate to ourselves, and in the way we relate to our natural world. That's what's broken. But why did Jesus have to die and rise from the dead to start that new story of shalom and redemption? The answer, Scripture insists, is that for a new story to play out, death needed to die. But why does death need to die? Well, again, the idea of shalom is that the peace of God is when we are right with God, we're right with other people, we're right with ourselves and with our natural world. And if we understand the peace of God to be that, then what death represents is the great interrupter. Death leaves broken what needs to be repaired. Death leaves rusty what needs to be restored. Death leaves old what needs to be made new again. Death is a problem in that it ends God's story of shalom and peace before it has had the opportunity to finish its work. What do I mean by that? What I want to do quickly is give you four stories. Four stories. Stories of people I know. Stories of people you can probably relate to that illustrate the peace that is broken and why death is the great interrupter. I think about a friend of mine, I'm sure some of you might know someone like this as well. A child grows up in the church and comes to trust somebody in the church, perhaps a pastor, a priest. And that child in the church finds themselves sexually abused and harmed. And through the trauma of that, this child grows into an adult who cannot seem to find reconciliation between the hurt they experienced by the church and the God this church apparently represents. And so this child grows to an adult and they spend the rest of their life angry at God because they can't separate the God who loves them from the church that has hurt them. And so this child grows to an adult and is so angry with God, hurt and abused by the church, angry, perhaps even abandoning the faith altogether, abandoning the very idea of God. This person simply walks away from it all and perhaps dies, never knowing a God that truly loved them. Now, if death doesn't die, then what does that mean? It means that person's story ends with a broken relationship with God. It ends without that relationship being restored, redeemed, renewed. And if that happens, then God's story does not win in the end. The old story of abuse and wounds and hurt, that wins. And that can't happen in God's new story, and so death has to die. Or consider our relationship with each other. I've told you of my mother before. She grew up abandoned by her biological parents, and the only mother she ever knew was repeatedly beaten and harmed by the only father she ever knew, a man who was shipped off to World War II, like millions of other young men, to kill each other in violence. And this man, the only person my mother knew as her father, he returns home broken and abusive. And as my mother grows, she grows up to hate and resent her father, hate the abuse. And so as soon as she can, she moves away, cuts off contact with him. And in the void, the only father that she ever knows dies a drunken alcoholic, a shell of a man, a broken man. He dies without ever having the chance to maybe express remorse. He dies without ever having the chance to maybe get help, to maybe be healed. He dies without the opportunity to even begin the work of repairing what had been broken. And my mother is left to this day with no opportunity to ever seek any sort of restored relationship with him. It's a story that plays out time and time again. A father and daughter estranged over hurt and abuse, and he dies. Is that how the story ends? Because if death doesn't die, what does that mean? It means the story finishes with a broken relationship. It ends without that relationship being restored, redeemed, made new. And if that happens, then God's story doesn't win in the end. It means the old story of war and wounds and abuse and broken relationships, that wins. But on Easter, God says, that can't happen, so death has to die. Or consider the person who is so torn up inside of themselves, they're so haunted by inner demons and shame and guilt and voices that call them to destroy themselves, and so they do. They take their life internally conflicted, completely at odds with their own self. Now, if death doesn't die, what does that mean? It means that that person's story ends with the inner demons of conflict and self-destruction winning the day. It ends without there being any restoration, no redemption. The old story wins. And if that happens, God's story doesn't win in the world. The old story of self-loathing and pain and the demons of our mind win. And that can't happen, so death has to die. And what about our natural world? What if someday in our near future, our greed and overconsumption and self-centered short-term thinking cook our planet to the point that crops don't grow, habitats disappear, the world becomes inhospitable to life? That's where our story is headed. So should that be the case, is that how the story ends? If death doesn't die, what does that mean? It means a cooked planet, a world fracturing and frying under the hands of greed and consumption. It ends with the same old story playing out. It ends with death winning the day, and that can't happen. So death has to die. Because if death doesn't die, then our stories end when death says they end, whether they're complete or not, restored or not, redeemed or not, made new or not. But on Easter Sunday morning, God delivers the verdict from the Supreme Court of Heaven, and he says, no, death and his friends finish the story no longer. And what Easter Sunday says is that as God raises Jesus up, and as God refused to let death be the end of Jesus' story, so death will not be the end of our story. Paul tells us this in Colossians. Jesus is the head of the body, the church. He's the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have supremacy. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace, shalom, through his blood shed on the cross, all things. Jesus' death and resurrection starts the story of shalom, of peace. And through Jesus' death and resurrection, God is making all things new. That means all stories new. But for that to happen, death had to die. And it did on Easter Sunday morning. In Revelation, Jesus cries out, "Behold, I make all things new." I'm making a story where death and his friends no longer finish the story. A story where there will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain. I'm making a story where death is done. It no longer has the final say because God is telling a story where God's shalom and peace will rule. And I find it interesting, this is why Paul, he's so confident of this new story that Jesus is telling with his resurrection. He cries out in death, he cries out at death in mockery. Mocks death. In 1 Corinthians 16, Paul's writing a letter to the church. He's relaying the story of our faith to the church. He's telling them about what Jesus did, how he died and he rose again. And he concludes his incredible summary of what the Christian path is all about by taunting death. And he echoes back to this small passage in Hosea where Hosea says this It's God speaking to his people, and he says, I will deliver this people from the power of the grave. I will redeem them from death. Where, O death, are your plagues? Where, O grave, is your destruction? And so Paul, echoing these words, he says, death has been swallowed up in victory. Death, where's your victory? O death, where's your sting? And what Scripture asks us to believe is a wild, audacious claim. Death swallows Jesus, but death cannot digest divinity. And so in Jesus' death and resurrection, it's actually death who's died. Death has been vanquished. Death is not the way the story of our world works. And if that is true, well, then in my mind, there's but one thing left to do. Have a funeral for death. And so we've invited all of death's friends, and we're going to have a funeral for death this morning. And I want to say this. My goal, our goal this morning, is not to belittle the pain and suffering in our world. We sat in that on Friday, even this morning, horrible news around the world. So my goal is not to make trite the very real pain of this world, but to join Paul in his mockery, to join with Paul in his sarcastic, satiric voice that taunts death. Where's your victory? Where's your sting again? And so, this morning, we do that by way of this. I give you a funeral for death.
My name is Pastor Gibney, and over the course of my career, I have performed hundreds of funerals. In my line of work, the unexpected becomes the expected. Given my experience, I'm often called in to do last-minute services without any prep. It happens more often than you think. A loved one passes suddenly. Families often forget to book someone to officiate. It's actually happened before where I show up without even knowing the name of the person who's died. But I pride myself on being a professional. And you learn to roll with these things. And let me tell you, I have done it all and seen it all. I've officiated funerals that were tragic, others that were beautiful, and everything in between. But this... well, I didn't see this coming. My lovely assistant, Cheryl, told me where to be and handed me the funeral details right as I was about to begin. And well, did this one catch me by surprise. I thought I had seen it all, but not this. This was truly a once in the history of the universe type thing. Excuse me, everyone. Excuse me, please, everyone, let's take our seats. We're about to get underway. Thanks, Cheryl. Thank you, and welcome to everyone gathered here. We are here today as friends and family to mourn and grieve the death of, why is it repeated, Cheryl? Is this a typo? Excuse me, sorry. Mourn and grieve the death of death. Should I read a psalm or? All right, you know what? Let's get right to the eulogies, shall we? Okay, let's see. We first have here, oh, good heavens. Suffering would, you wanted to share a few words about death? Please come up.
Hi! Any Boston fans in the house? Yeah, death and suffering represent, am I right? So everybody, please turn those frowns upside down because we are not here for a funeral today. We are here for a celebration of death's life. Woo! And you know, like Pain, hey girl, Pain, Death, and me, we were like, had a really special relationship. We were like the three amigos, compadres, BFFs. Yeah! And I think it was that, like, Socrates guy or something who said, like, no one really croaks if you, like, remember them in your, like, brain. So I'm going to tell you some stories about death. Okay? So, okay. There was this one time we were watching, like, our favorite movie, Love Actually. Because, I mean, what says pain, suffering, and death more than a movie about love when none of the plots get what love actually is? Oh my gosh, we watched that like a bazillion times. But like this time, Death had just put in like a gluten-free pineapple anchovy pizza, our favorite. And it was like right at his favorite part that the buzzer went off. So he was super distracted, and he opens the oven door, forgets to put his oven mitt on, reaches in and pulls the pizza and the rack out with his bare hands. Pain was on that. And there was Death calling bloody murder. It was amazeballs. And then there was this other time we were at a Nickelback concert. Pfft. Who am I kidding? We're at every Nickelback concert. They're like the best. Anyways, this time it had been a really great night. It was near the end of the night. Death had had a few drinks, and he bet me a 4-pack of Smirnoff Ice and a gas station hot dog that there was no way this night could get any better. Easiest bet I ever took. I mean, they don't call me suffering for nothing. So, like, not only does the band come up for 3 encores, but they end with a cover of Simply Having a Wonderful Christmas Time in July. Oh my gosh, so good. Okay, but, you know, there's lots of good stories. But, you know, Death had a soft side too. I know it's hard to believe, but you gotta understand, like, Pain, Death, and I, we, like, are the sphere of every human heart. And, like, I wear that as a badge of honor. But, and Pain and I, we're never going to give up. We're going to take this party going all night long. Woo! But, you know, Death, like, he'd often get us to stop. You know, sometimes even before we really started or when, like, he just felt like enough was enough. So, like, I know a lot of people hate the guy, but you gotta at least give that to him. So I'm gonna leave you with like a super uber famous historical quote that says, they can take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom! Woo! So cheers to Death. Bye!
Yikes. Well, that was something. Thank you, suffering, I guess. You certainly live up to your name. Moving along now, it's my pleasure to call up, oh boy, Tornado from the Natural Disaster family. Would you come up and share a few words with us, please?
Hello. My name is Tornado, and I've been asked to speak on behalf of the Natural Disaster family. I don't often speak in front of others. I'm a bit nervous, please bear with me. But our family really wanted to share about our relationship with death. It's probably no surprise, but we natural disaster folk can be a bit skittish, hard to pin down, tricky to predict. Been told we can come across as stuck up, pretentious even, seeing as we show up unexpectedly. And I get it, we're hard to make plans with. But of our many quirks, if you will, they are simply because we are not a confident family. May come as a surprise to you, but I think it's fair to say that everyone in the family deals with some pretty intense self-esteem and anxiety issues. And why wouldn't we, I would like to add? Do you know the amount of stress and pressure, high pressure, low pressure systems, there is on us to be huge? My sister, Hurricane, she struggles with this reoccurring nightmare of reaching Category 5 level strength, only to get downgraded to a tropical storm right off the coast of Florida. Keeps her up at night. Avalanche over there, I mean, unless you kill anyone, no one even hears about you. Pretty much just a screensaver now. And on a very personal level, I cannot begin to describe how embarrassing it is to have a town's tornado warning sirens going off, and I arrive and can barely muster an F1. Sometimes no funnel cloud at all. It is an excruciating humiliation that only my family will ever know. And I think that's what makes today so hard for us. Because death was always just so encouraging, so uplifting. Death believed in us, believed in me. Even when I didn't believe in myself, no matter how bad things were going, death always kept the dream alive. He'd call us back to our purpose and say, today we can wipe out a whole town. He used to love saying that. I have it pinned up in my locker. I mean, it's what we aspire to be, but it's hard. The pressure we put on ourselves can really take a toll, but death was always in our corner, reminding us that each new day brought all sorts of new possibilities. For me, it was the small things that death did that really make an impact. I remember him telling me one day, in order to be an F5 tornado, I'd think like an F5 tornado. So inspiring. So wise. I'll never forget those words. At the time, he made a little note and he put it in my lunchbox. When you think you've run out of steam, just keep spinning. It might sound cliche for those of you in the business, but for me, it was knowing that death just took some time out of his day to encourage me, build me up. That kind of friend is hard to find. I'm sorry to have lost him so soon. What else is there to say? That's the kind of person that death was. Always encouraging, pushing for us to be our best selves. Death. We'll miss you, and our family will work to carry on the vision. Global warming's gonna be great for us. Rest in peace.
Why am I crying? These people are awful. Thank you, Tornado, for that very touching tribute. Very touching. Maybe overly touching. I think I speak for all of us here when I say that the natural disaster family has given us lots of moments that we'll never forget. We love you, you know, but from a distance. And on that note, I want to call up Hart. Oh, wow, you gotta be kidding me, Cheryl. Heart Disease would like to speak on behalf of the disease family.
Hello. What a tremendous honor it is to speak on behalf of the dynasty that is the disease family. Cancer, HIV/AIDS, stroke. Thank you for this honor, and thank you all for being here and sharing with us in our grief. Oh, but how today My heart is like a vacant parking lot. A black hole. A cavernous pit. I am crushed by your departure. I am forever wounded by your loss. Trying to put all of this into perspective is beyond any of our comprehension, and yet, strangely, I find myself warmed by the words of Dr. Seuss, who once said, "Don't cry because it is over. Smile because it happened." And smile I shall, to have known and worked closely with and loved death. Well, I can truly say it has been the greatest honor and privilege of my life, as I know it has for many of us. Oh, but the lurid affair I had with death. All those nights in the hospital wings, those on-call rooms. How he touched me, held me, called me his own. They are the fondest memories of my life, and I will hold them treasured forever. But alas, death's desires and cravings were far too vast for simple me to ever satisfy. But still, what I wouldn't do for one more night, eh? And yet, here we are, wondering how to pick up the pieces. All I can think of are these words. The song is ended, but the melody lingers on. Yes, the song has ended, but I shall be the melody that lingers on. We shall be the melody that lingers on. So long as hospitals are filled with patients, so long as there are prescriptions to be filled, the melody lingers on, and I will find hope in that. So even on this day of profound grief and loss, I smile because it happened, and your melody lingers on. Rest in peace, my love.
What is even happening here? Thank you, Heart Disease, for those words. I don't really know what that was, but thanks. Unfortunately, there's more. So with that, let me call, this is awful, Cheryl. Death's business partner and friend, Handgun.
Well, this is something, isn't it? Huh? And nothing like a tragedy to bring out the whole Violent family. Sure, look at all of you. You don't show up at holidays. You ignore my emails, Facebook friend requests, not one heart on Instagram. And some of you even have the gall to get behind calls for banning me. And then you show up here pretending like we're all good. You got any summer plans, Handgun? You got some nerve, you know that? Some of you I haven't seen in years, but sure, death dies and the whole family comes out. I mean, even nuclear weapons is here skulking in the back. Yeah, I see you. You show your face twice in history, you think you're some sort of big deal?
Hey, I'm
Dream on! Dream on! You want a piece of it? You haven't had a serious news story since the Cold War, all right? I'm in the news every week. Sorry, I don't need to drag our family's dirty laundry out here in front of everyone. I'm sure it's no secret that our family doesn't get along, being violence and all. But I don't care who you are in the family. This is a tragedy and the end of us. It's the end of all of us. Don't you guys get it? I don't have a purpose anymore without death. I literally have no functional purpose or meaning in life without death. None of us do. This is it. And you're all up here with your fancy tributes, Don't you all get it? We're done. And the worst part is, some of us told him. I mean, it's never easy going into business with someone, but our family and death, we were the greatest. It was a dream. There's never been a business like ours, but it was never enough, was it? I tried to warn you all. When I heard our family was thinking of working with death to off that Jesus guy, I told you all it was a bad idea. You mess around with some God guy, you think it's going to work out well? Take a little seat, handgun. You're not old enough to help the family make decisions. Yeah, well, no, look at where we are now. I'm left with your mistakes. Now I'm done. We're all done. This is a tragedy. No, this isn't even a tragedy. This is just stupid. We could have existed forever together. But you mess around with one wrong person. And now this. And the worst part. Worst part isn't even that just this is just the end. No. That would be one thing. No, the worst part is this Jesus guy is going to beat all us weapons into gardening tools. I bet you didn't hear that part, did you? Maybe some of you should have been dusting up on that old scripture book I kept telling you about. Gardening tools. That's the future that we're looking at, family. All of us. Every one of us melted down, bent into some garden rake so some old granny can plant her tulips. If you think it gets any better for the rest of you, you got another thing coming. We used to watch movies together. You're done suffering. There's going to be no more tears. He left a note in my locker. Seriously, Tornado, you're nothing. He was a good lover. Please, heart disease. We're done. We're done. All of us. You know what? I'm not sad today. I'm angry. This one is on you, Violence family. You couldn't talk death out of this, and now we're done. As for you, death, yeah. Well, yeah. You always had to be thinking bigger and better, didn't you? You were the visionary, they said. But you couldn't just let sleeping dogs lie, could you? Now we're done. Rest in peace. I hope you rot in hell.
Let's keep it civil. Funeral services are never easy, especially not this one, Cheryl. And we know that grief hits us all in different ways, sometimes very different ways. And anger is part of the grieving process. And while things may feel a bit raw today, I think we should all remember not to do anything hasty in our anger. Let's limit the Smirnoff and the Nickelback. I hope that we can give each other the room and space we need to grieve in our own ways, you know? Actually, sometimes it's better if we're not all in the same room for too long. Moving on. So it seems like death had some unreleased work that when he passed away, you know, we can look forward to that being dropped over the next while by his family and friends. And I'm told that death's burial is actually scheduled sometime in the future. There actually isn't a specific date for that yet. We're still waiting on God to let us know when that will happen. So please stay tuned. And now for a few quick announcements. We want to encourage everyone to sign the guest registry on your way out. We would love to have a memory of everyone who's here. I don't know why. And there will be some light refreshments and sandwiches in the lobby, so please join us afterwards. To each and every one of you, for the love of God, go in peace.
I warned you. It's hard to imagine. It's hard to imagine. Because our whole reality has always known death as the end of the story. But the announcement of Easter, the announcement of Jesus' resurrection is that death and his friends no longer finish the story. God, through Jesus, is telling a new story of peace, shalom, because if death hasn't died, if death is not vanquished, then as Paul says, our faith is in vain, and we are to be pitied. If death hasn't been defeated by Jesus' resurrection, then our stories end when death says they end, complete or not, restored or not, redeemed or not. Both on Easter Sunday morning, God delivers the verdict from the Supreme Court of Heaven. Death and his friends no longer finish our stories. And what Easter Sunday says is that as God raises Jesus up and as God refused to let death be the end of Jesus' story, so death will not be the end of our story. And Paul tells us Jesus is reconciling all things, making all things new. He's making a new story, a story where there will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain. It no longer has the final say because God's telling a new story. A story that has started, and we are now called to be the players. And so this morning, may you come to believe and trust that there is no power, no force, including death itself, that can keep God from putting it all back together. There is no power, no force, including death itself, that will stop God from finishing the story of shalom and peace in the world. There's no power, no force, including death itself, that will stop God from repairing, restoring, making new, redeeming what has been broken in this world. And there's no power, no force, including death itself, that can stop God from finishing your story. God has a story for this world, and includes restoring everything. All that's been broken between us, all that's been broken between each other, all the experience of enmity we have with ourselves, all the decay and enmity between us and the natural world. On Easter Sunday morning, Jesus rises from the dead and announces nothing in this world can stop that story from happening, including death. And so death is vanquished, death is dead, and now we wait for death's burial. We wait for the totality of that event to come. We live into the new story by living into the shalom for the world. We restore what is broken. How we relate to God, each other, ourselves, and the environment, we work to repair, restore, reconcile, make new, redeem. And wherever there are hints of this old story, wherever that story still reigns, we announce with both word and deed, good news. That story's done. Death is dead. A new story has begun because Jesus is risen. And so I hope you will, Dave's going to take us through a song, and then we're going to once again sing Christ the Lord is Risen Today. I hope you will join our voices in singing that. Dave, I hand it to you.